You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
On this week's tour around the NL Central, the Chicago Cubs have yet another hotshot prospect ready to make his big league debut. Adam Wainwright is looking like Adam Wainwright once again, and Zach Davies of the Brewers is quietly having one of the best months of June of any starting pitcher in the major leagues. We kick things off this week with Cardinals reporter Jennifer Langosch. And the Cardinals playing better as of late, but they are coming off a 4-1 loss to the Astros on Wednesday, and definitely a mixture of good and bad in that game. Let's start with the good. Seven scoreless from Adam Wainwright last night, even though he is somehow winless in three starts this month. The ERA, nonetheless, an outstanding 1.80 in those three starts. And, you know, every week when Wainwright was struggling, it seemed like the only person not worried about Adam Wainwright was Adam Wainwright. And sure enough, he has validated those lack of concerns on his part, because he is back to being the ace that we know that he can be. And I think it's going to be a big relief given the other inconsistencies in that lineup that Waino is Waino again, at least for right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that Adam Wainwright is back. And, you know, a little different perspective than maybe a month ago, when kind of start to start, you weren't really sure what he was going to give you. But when you look at what he's rolled off, I mean, particularly this month, but even going back into May, I mean, he has gradually been getting better, kind of building toward this, and it's been spectacular despite maybe the winless month for him. I mean, the results are not indicative of how well he's pitched. So, I mean, I think you trace this back to early May when he started making an adjustment, a slight adjustment with where his arm slot was. And, you know, from there, it seemed like everything kind of fit into place for him. And, you know, for him to be pitching deeper into games last night, going seven scoreless innings, that's certainly a good sign for the Cardinals, who are expecting him to be one of the key contributors in terms of innings eating out of that rotation. And you're right, as you look at still some of the inconsistencies within the rotation, you know, particularly lately with Jaime Garcia and Michael Wacha, knowing that every fifth day when Adam Wainwright takes the mound that your team has a very good chance to win is a good place for this rotation to be in, and really where Adam thought he would be all along. And so you look at it, it's not that different than it was for him in 2012, coming off a season missed from Tommy John surgery. It took him about 2 months that year to get back in sync, and I think it's been similar this year, coming off a missed season, almost entirely missed season last year. It took him about two more months to get in sync, but from here you would expect him to sail and be the pitcher that we've seen in the past.
And Jen, you brought up a good point that even for a guy like Adam Wainwright, who's been there and done that and won, you know, accolades individually and team-wise, even for him, this is still a game of adjustments that, you know, these guys we tend to forget. For all their excellence, they're not cyborgs. They're not pre-programmed to, you know, throw at the perfect arm slot in the perfect location every time. Sometimes it takes those tiny little tweaks to get back to what you once were. And for Wainwright, he's making those adjustments even in his, you know, mid to late 30s here. Like I said, a constant game of adjustments, but he's adjusting well. As we said, the ERA below 2 in three starts this month just does not have a W to show for it, at least not so far. Jennifer, as for the not so good, another rough outing for Trevor Rosenthal. He's given up 6 earned through 5 2/3 in 7 appearances so far this month. As of this discussion, now to be fair to him, 4 of those 7 appearances have been scoreless, but he's been really lit up in the other 3. So it's kind of been a Jekyll and Hyde act for Trevor Rosenthal right now. Is that kind of what we should expect from him? Because the consistency, at least you know, comparable to seasons past, is not there right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a growing concern for the Cardinals. And right now, Mike Matheny is insistent that Trevor Rosenthal is this team's closer and that there's no change coming there. But, you know, of course, you look in that bullpen and you see a guy by the name of Sohn Wahno, a very decorated closer in Asia who's having a sensational rookie season here in the majors. And you wonder at some point if he could start to inherit those save opportunities. But it's just been a really bizarre season for Trevor Rosenthal in a couple regards. I mean, first, you look at his numbers, which aren't good, but you look at them separated between save situations and non-save situations, he's been nearly unhittable in save situations. Yet when he pitches in non-save situations, like he did in his most recent appearance, he's being lit up. I mean, 1 earned run, I believe, in his 15 save opportunities, 10 earned runs in his non-save appearances. So whether there's adrenaline there that in those save opportunities that he can't kind of make up for in the non-save opportunities, maybe that's an issue, but certainly some issues there. And you look at his season, really through the first 2 months of the season, he had very limited save opportunities, and that's just because of the way this club was playing. If they were winning games, They were typically winning them by large margins because of the great offensive season they've been putting together. And when they were losing games, they were usually out of it because of some poor starting pitching. So Trevor's appearances were few and far between, and the thought was, if he can start to get more regular work, he can start to get in sync. Well, unfortunately for him, here we are in June. He's pitched in 7 of the last 11 games the Cardinals have played. So, yes, there's been regular work, but the results are still inconsistent. So I think you point to the walk rate as one of the biggest issues. It's right near 8 walks per 9 innings allowed, and that's just untenable for a closer who needs to typically have a very low margin for error. I think you look at that, you look at his first batter efficiency, which has not gotten better. And if he can get those two things fixed, then we certainly know that this guy can be one of the most dominant closers in the league. But for whatever reason, again, we've seen some really good performances from him, and then we've seen other ones that have gotten very complicated very fast.
So, Jennifer, you mentioned the splits, you know, very good in safe situations, not so good in the non-safe situations. So who does the blame, for lack of a better term, fall upon here? Is it Mike Matheny for continuing to put him in situations where he knows and everybody knows that he's not producing, or does the blame fall more on Rosenthal himself, where, you know what, you're a professional, you have to do the job no matter what the scenario is? You know, where do you divide this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more on Trevor that, again, maybe if it's an adrenaline thing or, you know, the moment, you know, the greatness of the moment, I mean, he's got to find a way to replicate that regardless of when he goes in. Because here's the problem for Mike Matheny. If Mike Matheny sits back and waits for save opportunities, as I mentioned, they've been so few and far between that Rosenthal's not going to be able to get consistent work. So the only opportunity for him to get out there consistently, for him to try to work through some of the mechanical issues he's had, is for him to sometimes have to pitch a non-safe spot. Now, if this continues to be the case, perhaps we don't see those opportunities coming maybe in a game like last night where the Cardinals are down by 1 in the 9th inning. Maybe you use somebody else there if you're worried about Trevor's ability to keep that deficit where it is. But he is going to have to learn how to pitch in non-safe spots because, as I mentioned, there's going to be some opportunities that's the only time he's going to be able to get in, and he's got to figure out a way to make it work.
And you almost never hear of a closer controversy or anything close to it with this Cardinals team. Maybe this is the time that we finally have one. As you said, they've got quite the plan B already in their bullpen. We'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks. And, Jen, to switch gears a little bit, you know, we hear discussion every season about whether interleague play has run its course. And in looking at the Cardinals' schedule, I was really struck by the oddity of it, because here they are. They have a great 6-game road trip against all NL Central foes. They go 5-1. Now they come home. They've got an entire 5-game homestand against AL teams. It's so odd. They've lost, you know, they lost both games against the Astros. They've got the Rangers coming in for a rematch of the World Series a couple years ago, 2011. So, you know, I look at that and I say, that's got to take the wind out of your sails a little bit if you're a Cardinals player, to know that, you know, you're in the thick of division competition. Now you're playing two completely random teams. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, and I think the other thing to add in there, too, is, you know, they won they had a great road trip, went 5-1 on the road, and they have an off day on Monday. Then they play 2 games against the Astros. They have an off day on Thursday. They have had so many off days this month that any sort of consistency or consistent role that this team wanted to get on, it's really kind of come to a screeching halt every time they have one of these off days. So it is weird, and I will say that the Cardinals, after being swept by the Astros in that 2-game series, did note, you know, that the lack of familiarity of the pitchers that they face might have had something to do with the reason why the offense, you know, by and large, aside from a home run by Brandon Moss and a home run from Matt Adams, really didn't show up for those 2 games. So, you know, usually in those situations where there's very little familiarity between pitchers and hitters, the pitchers have the advantage. And I think we saw that play out in this series. But yeah, it's a very weird month with 5 off days and a 22-day span. And then you look at these 2 American League series coming up. Then they go to Chicago, play a big series against the Cubs. And then they go back to the American League with interleague games against both Seattle and Kansas City. So an odd portion of the schedule. It hasn't helped the Cardinals momentum-wise. And in the meantime, you know, they're looking at that NL Central deficit, and they're not making up any ground, which is we're approaching almost the halfway point of the season, has to be growing a little bit more concerning.
Chris from Fox Sports Ohio. And, Chris, we thank you for the time. And as we speak, the Reds coming off a disappointing loss today. They lose to the Braves 7-2. And, Chris, I got to think, after taking the first 2 games of that 4-game series against a woeful Atlanta team, to walk away with a split has got to be disappointing.
Yeah, I think it was. It was a long game last night. The Reds played 13 innings in 5 hours, 13 minutes, and ended up losing that ball game, I think, 9-8. tonight or today, this afternoon, the game started at noon. So, you know, you had to sleep fast, get to the ballpark quickly. And the Reds just really didn't have a lot of zip out there. And it's one of those things where I think that had they come out with a little bit more energy, a little bit better mindset, they would have been in this ball game. But the Braves just separated themselves. Freddie Freeman was just simply too much for them to handle in this series.
Yeah, Freeman hitting for the cycle last night, the first cycle of 2016. I believe three more hits in this game today, which the Braves win 7-2. And, Chris, what was especially disappointing last night from the Reds' perspective, their bullpen was outstanding for six innings. Guys like Hoover, Ramirez, and Tony Cingrani. And then I believe Alfredo Simon's first inning, a scoreless one, but then he blows up in the 13th. And then to lose that way after the bullpen was so outstanding, to lose an 8-6 lead in the 13th, that really had to sting.
Yeah, it really was. But, you know, at the same time, the Reds were simply out of pitching. They had used seven pitchers total last night. And just one of those situations where, you know, unless your team scores, it's awfully tough to win on the road in extra innings. And that's where the Reds put themselves last night. It's one of those games that could have gone either way. The Reds had a situation for two nights in a row where they had the Braves, bases loaded, Braves did. Nobody out, and the Reds were able to get out of that jam. And so the Reds, I think, were feeling pretty lucky just to escape and be able to make that game to a 13.
Yeah, they did get out of a lot of jams, a lot of hot water last night before it fell apart in the 13th. And, Chris, when you look at the bullpen overall, you know, we've chronicled their struggles all during April, all during May, but I brought up the names, you know, Hoover, Ramirez, and Tony Cingrani, and, you know, Simon on occasion. But it seems like for the first time this year, this bullpen is finally finding some traction and some consistency. Is that how it feels to you?
Yeah, it does. And I think it's even going to get better as the season goes on because there's a couple of guys that the Reds expected to be here all year long. The opening day starter, Raisel Iglesias, is going to be in the bullpen fairly soon when he returns from a rehab assignment. Michael Lorenzen, who was in the rotation last year, when he returns from a rehab assignment, and he's nearly ready to go, he'll be going into the bullpen. So you're going to see a change in personnel, but I think you're going to see an uptick in the quality of arms that are down there too. So Brian Price is anxious for that to happen. There's no doubt.
Yeah, it seems like better days on the horizon for this improving Reds bullpen. And Chris, with regards to the starting rotation, in the month of June, I think Brandon Finnegan, by far and away, has been their best starter. 2-0 in three starts, a 1.86 ERA, opposing batters only hitting .206 against him. And what gives you confidence that Finnegan is finally putting it all together, realizing all that potential, as opposed to a guy who maybe is just getting hot for a couple of weeks?
Well, you got to remember that Finnegan's only 23 years old, so you don't get it all at one time. It takes a while to understand what pitching in the big leagues is all about. But he does get the idea. He understands that he's got to command his fastball better. He's got a great arm, life on his fastball, good changeup and slider and so on. He's as tough a competitor as you'll ever meet on a baseball diamond. I mean, this is a guy that just doesn't want to back down to anybody. So it's that intangible that I probably like the best about Finnegan. Secondly, he's got his ears open and his mouth shut. So he's willing to learn and hear what veteran people have to say to him and trying to coach him. So I think that he's got a very high ceiling. It's interesting because of all the three pitchers that the Reds got in exchange for Johnny Cueto from the Kansas City Royals last year, Finnegan was the one guy that they had penciled in tentatively as a bullpen pitcher. But he's been set on being a starter, and he's pitched very well. So far, he's been the Reds' most consistent starter. One thing you may not know, Matt, is that Saturday there was a TBA, to be announced, pitcher for the Reds against the Houston Astros. The Reds are finally going to bring up their young prospect who also came over from the Kansas City Royals, Cody Reed, a left-hander who will remind a lot of people of Madison Bumgarner. They say that he was the real jewel in the entire deal, and he's pitched very well down in AAA this year. He's finally going to get his major league start for the first time on Saturday against the Astros.
Kerry, thank you for the time. And before we touch on the very exciting series with the Nationals in Washington, I want to start off with some exciting news coming down on Thursday. The Cubs are promoting their red-hot catching prospect, Wilson Contreras from AAA. His numbers this season off the charts, .350, 9 homers, 16 doubles, 3 triples, driven in 43, I believe a 20-plus game hitting streak too. So why do the Cubs feel that now is the proper time to promote Wilson Contreras?
Well, I think if fans remember last year, the Cubs promoted Kyle Schwarber in June for an interleague series. They didn't want to use him in the field, but they had him be the designated hitter. And it, what they're doing is they're kind of looking at this as a way to ease Contreras into the big leagues the way that they did with Schwarber last year, and just, you know, let him get a taste of it, let him learn from Montero and David Ross, let him take advantage of having those guys around and get in some games. He's not going to be, fans should relax, he's not going to be the number one catcher. He's going to be technically on the depth chart. He's the third guy. But with the fact that the Cubs have such a large lead in the division, they can afford to do this now. And this will, I know from having watched what happened with Schwarber last year, I know that it will benefit Contreras big time.
So is the plan, Kerry, to have him stay as long as possible in that third catcher role with this team, or is the plan more along the lines of, you know what, get him up here now, get him a taste, have him learn from the two veterans, and then eventually send him back down, or is it kind of all to be determined?
Well, my understanding is that right now it's just to get him a taste. I think today, as we're speaking, it's an off day, and this came down, and just in my correspondence with Cubs officials, they described this as a chance for Contreras to kind of get his feet wet. Those were their words. So I think this is more, we'll know more on Friday when the team is back in action, you know, opening up the Pirates series. And I think we'll get a little clearer idea as to how they plan to use him. I know that Contreras, to his credit, has not only been working on his game at Triple A Iowa, but he's also been watching the Cubs games and watching the way that the pitchers are working with the catchers and trying to learn the pitchers that way. But as in anything, you know, nothing can replace actual game experience. And I think that's what they're hoping to develop. This kid is really good and has the potential to be really, really, really good. So it's, you know, let's bring him up.
Yeah, why not? Now's a good time as any, and as you said, he's just going to be a sponge with absorbing all that information he'll get from Miguel Montero and from David Ross, and just one more hotshot youngster in that Cubs pipeline on his way to the major leagues. Very exciting times for Wilson Contreras. And, Kerry, the Cubs coming off that thrilling series with the Nationals, a tough loss yesterday. They had a couple of late-inning leads, could not hold it. They fall 5-4 in 12 innings, a game that featured, you know, comeback after comeback. And the thing we kept hearing after the game, not just from the Cubs, but from the Nationals too, it had a playoff feel. It felt like October baseball. From your perspective, did it feel that same way to you?
Yes. I wish, from my perspective, I had been a little closer to the field, because, as you know, at Nationals Park, you're way up high in the nosebleed section. But to be honest, it was probably the most intense three-game series that I've been a part of during a regular season in a long time. I mean, it's just, every pitch seemed to matter. Every play mattered. Every hit. And there were just so many little things that happened in the game that went well. You know, Anthony Rizzo gets a home run, a clutch home run off of a left-hander, which had not been the case. You know, Russell and Baez and Albert Almora come through late in the, I can't even remember what inning it was, but late to go ahead. You know, I mean, there were just so many little good things. Jason Hamill might have had his best outing of the year for seven innings and unfortunately didn't get a decision. But he, you know, they're going head-to-head with Strasburg, who hadn't lost this year, and they held it. They held their own. And Madden, after the game, had nothing but good things to say about the team and about the effort. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody happier after a loss, which sounds weird, but he really was.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show how excited they were to be a part of it, even though the wins and losses did not come out in their favor, losing two out of the three games. But I know that fans watching this, whether you're not a fan of the Cubs or the Nationals, just fans in general saying, you know what, I want this as my 2016 NLCS. To see these teams duke it out potentially seven times would be a wonderful thing. Kerry, the lone Cubs victory in the series came on Tuesday thanks in large part to the aforementioned Albert Almora Jr. He had the tie-breaking double in the ninth, and the Cubs closed it out in the bottom of the inning. And, you know, judging from your recent articles, it seems like Joe Maddon is already just head over heels in love with this kid, and with good reason, I would think.
Yeah, Albert, defensively, he may be the best outfielder in their system. I mean, he's just really talented, really gifted. And it's always, he's just been a little slow developing offensively, but part of the problem there has just been in injuries. And it's not, it's just been hard to get him on the field on a regular basis. What I love is when you talk to him, he's his focus is on the team, and not me, not you know, a me first attitude at all, nothing like that. His focus really is on, I want to do what's best for the team. Now the Cubs are going to have a really tough decision when Jorge Soler is healthy and comes back, because Almora is in essence taking Soler's spot on the roster. The thing is, you know, it goes back to the long time argument, you know, what's more important, playing time, development, you know, or just being up in the big leagues. And the Cubs will have to make a decision at that time. And it doesn't have to be made soon, because Soler, we're not going to get an update on Soler until Friday this week, because he didn't go on the road trip with the team. So I don't know. I just haven't seen him and don't know where he is in terms of progress with his hamstring. But Almora, it was just really special to see him come through like that, and really interesting to see just the spark he gives the dugout. He's a great teammate, and you know, you can't say that about a lot of guys, but he's really a great teammate, and that the guys really like him.
Adam, as we so often do, let's start things off today by talking some Willy Peralta, as Willy had quite the roller coaster weekend, to say the least. It's pretty much common knowledge by now on this Monday afternoon that he was optioned to AAA with the pending return of Matt Garza. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but I want to start off by talking about that home run. I mean, for all the stunning developments we've seen this year, you know, first and foremost, Bartolo Colon going deep at age 42, about a month or so ago. But Peralta, now we know he's not a small guy. He's never been a small guy. I believe Baseball Reference has him 6'1", 255. So the size is there. But my goodness, I think Statcast had it 429 or something like that. It was just an absolute moonshot for his first homer of the season against the Mets this past Saturday. Did you have any idea that he had that kind of power in him?
Well, yeah, definitely. And I sound like I'm making this up, but he takes part in a home run derby in the Dominican over the offseason with Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and some other big-time sluggers. And Peralta says he's actually fared better in those events than some of those hitters. He loves home run derby. He does it in batting practice. He swings really hard. This was a homer that was a long time in the making. He just hadn't ever connected for one in a big league game until he did the other day. So certainly this was in there. He was actually scouted originally in the Dominican as an outfielder, and the Brewers and some other teams liked his arm. They noticed his arm in some throwing drills, and one day asked him to say, hey, you know, what can you do off a mound? And he gave it a shot, and that's how he became a pitcher. It was late in his baseball life. So this guy loves to hit. He finally got a hold of one. And as you said, unfortunately, it was the lone highlight of his weekend.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And I know that as I was doing highlights for that game, I kind of said, you know what, for all the buzz about Madison Bumgarner, who himself has had some memorable shots of his own, if it was up to me, if you had to pick a pitcher for the home run derby, I'm taking Willy Peralta over Madison. What do you think?
Boy, I don't know. Bumgarner's done it over a lot of years. There was a crazy stat that in his last, it was like 120 plate appearances, Bumgarner had the same number of homers as Bryce Harper. Hmm. You know, obviously spread out over a much longer period of time, but he can really hit. I think I'd go Bumgarner because he's shown it to us over Willy Peralta does some good work in BP, though, I promise you. Now he'll go to AAA Colorado Springs. So the times he does get to take BP, they're going to be pretty epic there in the thin air. Unfortunately for him, he's going to have to pitch in that thin air as well, and that's going to be a much higher priority. The Brewers basically got to a point where they just couldn't keep doing the same thing, which was, you know, they had stayed the course with Willie Peralta. He had stayed the course between starts. He felt good. He says he feels as healthy as he's ever felt. They were really puzzled by the results that he had basically all season. And look, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over and over and expect a different result. So they have Matt Garza coming off the disabled list this week. They had six starters. You can't send down the aforementioned Zach Davies. He's pitching way too well. Junior Guerra pitching way too well. And Willie Peralta with an option and pitching terribly, even though he's your opening day starter, he's the odd man out, so he's got to go down and pitch in the thin air. This is going to be a huge challenge. There have been guys who have shown they can pitch there. The Brewers have a reliever in the bullpen right now, a prospect, Jacob Barnes, who put up some really nice numbers at AAA Colorado Springs, including his outings there in Colorado. And, you know, it shows it can be done, but I think for every Jacob Barnes, there's about three or four Taylor Youngmans, a pitcher who was removed from the Brewers rotation earlier. He went down to AAA and just found no rhythm at all, and he is still stuck in some pretty deep struggles. So tough for the Brewers. This is two-fifths of their opening day starting rotation now have been demoted to AAA, and we're not even halfway through June yet.
Yeah, really a stunning development, and not just, you know, any two guys. We're talking about one guy in Peralta who 2 years ago won 17 games, and another guy in Taylor Youngman, as you said, that was so promising upon his call-up to the majors late last year. So to have these two guys regress, certainly a disappointing development for the Brewers, no doubt. Now, I know that you wrote in speaking with Craig Counsell that this was a difficult discussion to have with a guy that does have the track record that Willie Peralta does. I mean, when he is sent down to AAA, when he makes that first start, I mean, did they outline something specific to say to him, you know, you need to improve X or Y, or is it more of a matter of you've just got to get your head straight and you've got to get your confidence back? I mean, is it a mixed bag where it is something mechanical, it is something mental, or is it more one or the other here?
Well, I think if it were something specific mechanically, they would have been able to work on that in the big league. And every conversation I've had with Willie Peralta, with Craig Counsell, with Derek Johnson, their pitching coach, is that they couldn't put their finger on what was going on with him. I mean, it was the location of his fastball. That was the problem. When he made a mistake, it got hammered. When he was down in the zone, Jonathan Lucroy, the catcher, said he still was as good as any pitcher Lucroy sees. But there were too many pitches up, and when there were pitches up, they got hammered. But how to fix that eluded them. And they were not able to find a specific problem with his mechanics. They were not able to figure out what it was. So, in going down to AAA, it is sort of just find some confidence. Try to find some consistency where you can bury that pitch below the zone. They have a really good pitching coach down there named Fred Dabney, who's been in the organization for a long time. The guys who've come across him love the guy. He's worked all his way up from the lower levels of the Brewers minor league system, a lot of experience. So they have a really good pitching coach that's going to have eyes on Willie Peralta, and maybe something, you know, some new eyes can find something and give him something else to think about as he pitches. I've seen it with pitchers before. The tweaks that they make mechanically can be so minute to the naked eye. Sometimes it's just about putting something else in a guy's head, and that can make the difference for him. He gets two or three starts where he feels competent, and all of a sudden he can get on a roll. That, I think, is what they're looking for Peralta. And Craig Counsell said as they evaluate this, they're going to be looking at Fred Dabney's report more than they're going to be looking at the line scores, because the line scores, more often than not, at that particular affiliate are ugly. And a guy can pitch well, and it's not going to show up in the line score, but it will show up in those reports. It's a big old outfield, swirling wind, weird things happen there. It's like Coors Field on steroids. And they're gonna have to look beyond the box score a little bit to figure out when is the right time to bring him back. The goal, of course, is to bring him back, that this is a temporary thing and they're able to get him back in the big league rotation, both because he's a good pitcher and they want him to make starts at a high level like he did, as you said, in 2014, and also because he's a great trade commodity for a team that continues down this path of rebuilding. And to completely lose out on that, like they lost out on Kyle Loesch last year, would be pretty devastating.
Adam, you're joining us actually from the Steel City right now, and I got to imagine it's a very happy, hungover Pittsburgh after the Pittsburgh Penguins won their fourth Stanley Cup in franchise history Sunday night, defeating San Jose in six games. And do you notice more of a happy vibe in Pittsburgh right now, Adam?
I actually went out last night. The Pirates played sort of that Sunday evening game. So I went out to kind of catch the end, you know, the second or third period. And just the reaction going on around, even around PNC Park. Obviously, the big watch party was downtown at the Consolidated Energy Center where the Penguins play. But just the reaction around the North Shore when the, you know, when the clocks hit zero was just really cool to be a part of. There's going to be a parade in Pittsburgh on Wednesday. The Pirates are going to be in New York. But I will not be in New York. So there's a small chance that you might find me on the streets of Pittsburgh, just to see what the sights are after the Penguins bring back Stanley Cup.
I would say more than a small chance. Let's be honest here, right?
Yeah, I might get out there. I've never actually been to one, so I think that'll be pretty fun.
Yeah, I went to the Red Sox parade in 2013. That was an experience I'll never forget. So for anybody that has the chance to go to a championship parade, it is something I definitely recommend. And that's where Adam's going to be on Wednesday.
Yeah, say hi.
Adam, sorry, what's that?
Say hi. I said, yeah, say hi if you see me out there.
Absolutely,
people
of course.
People are listening.
A man of the people, Adam Barry. So one parallel I'd like to draw between you know, the Penguins and the Pirates is that it's easy to forget now. The Penguins in mid-December were not even a playoff team. I mean, they were a mess. They fired their coach. They weren't scoring. What's wrong with Sidney Crosby? Dominated all the discussion. A few months later, they're hoisting the Stanley Cup. Now the Pirates right now, they've lost five straight games. They had a hideous week, not just in the win-loss column, but travel-wise, too. They had the Tuesday doubleheader. They wrapped up the series with the Mets on Wednesday night, then boarded a plane, went to Colorado, a hideous trip. They were in Denver less than 24 hours. They got their butts kicked by the Rockies. Jeff Locke, 11 earned runs, I believe, a career worst. They come back, resume their home stand against the Cardinals, and the Pirates really were not competitive in any of the three games in that series. So just like the Penguins turned things around, Pittsburgh fans hoping the Pirates eventually do the same thing. But, Adam, the question I want to pose is that, you know, you rarely hear players complain about the schedule or the travel because it usually falls on deaf ears. But internally, at least, I got to feel there's some frustration by these guys about the week they just had.
Yeah, I mean, that one was especially tough, the Colorado trip, just because the Rockies were kind of in control of it. It wasn't necessarily a Major League Baseball thing. The Rockies could reschedule that game whenever, and they chose right in the middle of this Pirates homestand, and not any homestand, but one with the Mets and Cardinals in town, and a game that stretched the Pirates playing, having 31 scheduled game days in a row, which is you know, beyond what the collective bargaining agreement allows. It's beyond what anybody really should do. Clint Hurdle joked after yesterday's game that I think it's against the law to play any more days in a row, so they're enjoying a very welcome off day right now on this Monday. But, I mean, it's discontent. Obviously, you don't want to do it, but they had to. Clint Hurdle always tries to take that perspective of this isn't something we have to do. It's something we get to do. And it's, you know, it's hard to spread that when it is inconvenient. But I think they tried to make the best of it. It's just they're also not playing very well right now, which made the whole thing seem worse. You know, it's one of those that if you come out on the other end and you've won 5 of 7 or, you know, what have you, it's, you know, a neat story or something that you overcame. And in this case, it's just kind of compounded by the way they're playing lately.
Yeah, it just was the perfect storm of, you know, bad things going on for this team in that they, you know, they lose in Colorado. They come back on Friday. They're dead on their feet. And then to add, you know, injury to exhaustion, if you will, on Friday's game, we see not only Garrett Cole, but his battery mate Francisco Cervelli depart the game early due to injury. Cole in the third, I believe, due to a triceps tightness, and Cervelli, I can't quite remember what his ailment was, but give us updates on those guys and how serious of ailments are we talking here?
Let's start with Cervelli because we do actually have a little more finality. Cervelli had surgery this weekend to repair a fractured hamate bone in his left hand. It's one of those things that just happens on one swing. You know, he took a bad swing, clearly came up trying to flex it and grip it, and just fractured the bone in the hand. It's something you see fairly often with hitters. You know, you'll see a couple guys go out with this year. Giancarlo Stanton dealt with it. I think Pablo Sandoval has dealt with it in the past. So he's out for 4 to 6 weeks at the very least, depending on how well he recovers from that. So the Pirates are left with Chris Stewart and the newly acquired Eric Kratz behind the plate while Cervelli is out recovering. Elias Diaz, their top AAA catching prospect, is still recovering from his own injury, a right elbow surgery, and at this rate, it's looking like Cervelli might even beat him back. So a position where it seemed like they had a lot of depth, all of a sudden they're out trying to get Eric Kratz to, as he started the series finale against the Cardinals on Sunday. So that's not quite the worst-case scenario, but it's certainly not what you want for the Pirates, who are based so much around pitching and defense, especially behind the plate with framing and the blocking and the game calling and all that kind of stuff. So that's a tough break, and Gerrit Cole is still kind of up in the air right now as we speak. He's not on the disabled list. It's right triceps tightness is all we've heard, but the Pirates have basically said you can scratch his next start, which would be Thursday. The question becomes, is he going to miss more than one start? If he is, they're going to put him on the disabled list and most likely call up prospect Jameson Taillon to make his second major league start and potentially a lot more after that, depending on how long Cole is out. But if it's just going to be one start and Cole's back in a week or 10 days, they can, you know, reconfigure the rotation with today's off day to try to make that work. There's been no announcement, no real updates. Cole went through a lot of tests this weekend. I think their hope is probably just that it was tightness, something that sort of popped up on him, and that it's not a strain or something more serious. Should find out hopefully more by the time the team arrives in New York on Tuesday.
Well, terrible news, of course, for Francisco Cervelli. Like you said, you know, you have depth at that position. All it takes is one swing to erase that depth. And Cervelli out for the foreseeable future. And Gerrit Cole, as you said, hopefully nothing too serious. And Adam, that gives us a perfect segue into the next topic, which is Jameson Taillon, who could be back with the club as of Thursday to fill in for the now injured Gerrit Cole. Taillon had his big league debut, the long-awaited big league debut, this past week against the Mets. Six innings, three runs. That is a quality start. The Pirates did lose the game in extras, but seemed like Taillon received very positive reviews across the board. Give us your assessments of his performance.
Yeah, it was mostly just the poise, I think, and the personality that impressed the Pirates so much. I mean, this is a guy who was number two overall draft pick in 2010, waited so long, got through, you know, two really long years of injuries and worked his butt off on the backfield to chain link fence league down in Bradenton, you know, away from eyes, away from the minor leagues even, to get back. So, you know, probably a lot of nerves like you would expect from anybody. And he really didn't show too many signs of them. He wasn't his sharpest. He's been so great down at Triple A Indianapolis, and there wasn't quite that downhill plane on the fastball to get to the bottom of the zone. He got away with some pitches, didn't get a lot of swings and misses, but you could see the competitiveness and you could see the poise and the makeup that the Pirates love so much about Taillon. And I think he even admitted it, just having the debut part of it, you know, this kind of long anticipated, you know, something the Pirates have been waiting for. It's a big moment for the organization. So having that behind him, I think, is going to bode well for him, whether it's Tuesday's start or whenever he gets called back up, because whenever that happens, the Pirates are hoping they don't have to send him back down.